Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. Brad Gooch is a poet, novelist, and a biographer. And whose most recent book is Rumi's Secret, The Life of the Sufi Poet of Love. Among his previous 10 books are Smash Cut, a memoir of Howard and Art and the 70s and the 80s, Flannery, a life of Flannery O'Connor, which was a National Book Critics Circle Award finalist, a New York Times Notable Book of the Year, and a New York Times bestseller, and City Poet, The Life and Times of Frank O'Hara. Brad Gooch has received a National Endowment for the Humanities Fellowship and a Furthermore grant in publishing from the J.M. Kaplan Fund. A professor of English at William Patterson University, Brad earned his Ph.D. at Columbia University and lives in New York City. Author Brad Gooch appears live at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C., Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. For more information, and this is really important this time, for more information, check out the website because this segment with Brad Gooch is sold out. And you can find out more by phoning 202-633-3030. That's 202-633-3030 to be added to the waitlist. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, we're joined today live via Skype on the Not Old Better Show by author Brad Gooch. Well, Brad Gooch, thanks so much for joining us today. Brad, I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan of Rumi's. And many still might not be completely familiar with who Rumi is. They might know his work. But tell us, you know, why is Rumi important?
Well, great to be here today. And that is interesting. When I was working on this book by Rumi, I noticed that half the time people would light up when I said I was writing a biography of Rumi, and then the other half would say, "Who's Rumi?" And even the half that lit up sometimes thought he was a Buddhist or, you know, didn't really have much of a sense of his life. But he was Muslim. He was came from a religious family. He was born in Central Asia in 1207 and dies in Konya, Turkey in 1273. And is this great Sufi poet of love, both human and divine, who keeps having a kind of infinite shelf life, I guess. I mean, in America, he has this epithet of being best-selling poet in America. Mm-hmm. I don't know how exact that is, but you know, but he's definitely endured and is popular and gets reinvented every so often.
And what about his parents? He comes from a family of some means, certainly, and some education, and he seems as though he's very close to his father. And
yes, he came from a traditional family of preachers and jurists and teachers, and very much revered his father, Bahá'u'lláh. The sort of central event in the life of Rumi and his family was moving from what's now Tajikistan, where he was born, and emigrating, partly because of the invasion of the Mongols under Genghis Khan. So his family traveled over 2,500 miles before they wound up in what's now Turkey. And so for part of his life, he and his family were displaced persons or migrants or refugees.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of parallels with today almost. I mean, you use the word refugee. I mean, right. We can learn something about Islam from some of Rumi's works.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think the part of Rumi in his life that's coming up at the moment is actually his background as a Muslim and the way in which his work is grounded in the Quran, which he had obviously memorized, that goes through all the poetry, and also then the Sufi tradition, which is the mystical tradition within Islam that emphasized more the closeness, intimacy with God, and also used music and poetry and song in meditation, which is particularly seductive and appealing, and you know, part of why I think Rumi appeals to us today.
And it's interesting that you use, again, some of these words to describe him, because it seems like he's revered today. And what was that like, writing about somebody who was such a revered figure in history, almost a saint?
Well, it is interesting. If you go to the Rumi's shrine in Konya, in Turkey, there are as many as 5,000 visitors a day. And some of them, will sit there and they recite the poems of Rumi in Persian, which they're written, or Turkish, or English. But you also have, women drawing veils over their heads and people praying. And so he had this double aspect, which is sort of rare. I mean, maybe St. Francis of Assisi had it, of being simultaneously a poet and a kind of saintly figure and religious leader.
I have kind of another maybe, kind of off-the-wall question for you. After writing your memoir, Smash Cut, and, about life during the 70s and the 80s and kind of crazy New York City during that, writing a book about Rumi, somebody, peaceful and loving, they're kind of two polar. There's a bit of a, and I wonder, was there a strategy in kind of moving towards Rumi?
Not really. I mean, I worked on Rumi's Secret for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually Smash Cut, his memoirs came out 2 years ago, erupted in the middle of it. I actually think it was because there's so much research involved in Rumi. I needed to learn Persian or Farsi, which I did in two immersion programs, the University of Texas, Austin, University of Wisconsin, Madison. I needed to travel the map of Rumi's life through Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Iran, Syria, Turkey. So it was a labor of love, but I hadn't maybe thought through all the labor that was involved. And so I think, somewhat, this memoir, I would write it at the end of the day after working on the biography all day. And it was almost like a vacation or a release to be writing something that I didn't need a fact for every sentence, and I could express in that way. Interestingly, writing the biography, I mean, Rumi's time was not a peaceful time. It was very tumultuous. And I think I was fascinated by Rumi's life in part because he had this great midlife transformation. And when he met this outlier mystic named Shams of Tabriz, Rumi was about 37 years old and more in the mold of his father as a preacher and a jurist. And he had teaching posts at different colleges. And Shams of Tabriz was this itinerant mystic who'd been traveling around the Middle East studying with different teachers. And the two of them had this electric connection. And Shams encouraged Rumi to shift from a kind of path of knowledge to a path of love in the heart, and from writing sermons and fatwas to writing poems and songs and music. And I was fascinated by this. I mean, I think young people, age 19 or 20, you could decide to become a mystic or a poet, and Shams has really done that. But for Rumi, he had a family, he had three children, he had his teaching posts, and he was already well known as a preacher. And for him to go through this transformation, which his son described as changing from a pious man to a mystic, took a lot of energy and was audacious and inspiring to read about.
To be able to go through a change like that, to find maybe this different path, a more interesting relationship, certainly at the time,
mm-hmm.
and then have that be something that your family might not embrace, took some courage.
Right, there's a lot of tension around it. But at a certain point, Shams of Tabriz disappears, and never entirely explained, and this causes Rumi to go through a sort of meltdown. But out of this comes this flowing of poetry as he tries to deal with his separation and somehow reconcile human love and divine love. So all these great poems of Rumi's that we love and read are mostly written after he was 40 years old. And they include 3,000 ghazal, which are like sonnets, 2,000 rubaiyat, which are quatrains, a 6-volume spiritual epic in couplets called the Masnavi, as well as talks, and there are even letters of Rumi. So he's the kind of, we can understand him as a genius, certainly, in the writing of poetry. And it's kind of, it's an astonishing change and transformation in the middle of his life, which also went along with spiritual wisdom.
It's interesting, in some of the research that I did about you, I found a comment that you'd made, and I think this was attributed maybe to maybe a student of yours or maybe a colleague, that there is some similarity you found, or maybe a genuine comparison that can be made with Walt Whitman and Rumi. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that. I love Whitman's work, and it's beautiful, and it's about our uniqueness. And so I thought that was a nice parallel to make.
Yeah, that was actually said to me. I was in Aleppo, Syria, the day the civil war broke out, and in 2011. And I was in the bazaar, and this guy comes by on a bicycle, who was Syrian but had an impeccable British accent. He'd been in school in England. And we started talking. I said I was doing a biography of Rumi, who's this poet who's famous in America now. And then he stopped me and he said, "Oh, no. Rumi's one of my favorite poets in the world." And he started reciting a kind of Victorian translation of Rumi. And then he said to me, which was important kind of passkey for me, he said, "I think that Rumi is one of the world's great poets, like Shakespeare or your Walt Whitman. He never tells his secret." Which is where I got a theme of my book and a title. Mm-hmm. And also the Walt Whitman comparison hadn't really occurred to me as strongly. And the more I thought about it, the more compelling it was, because Whitman also wrote this poetry that had a kind of epic intimacy to it in some way. I mean, he was both very close to his reader. He's always talking about I and you, and that sets up a kind of relationship. He's also talking about cosmic love. And, Whitman likewise sort of blends the two, and it's more written in later half of his life and infused with a kind of wisdom. So I think it's a good comparison with Rumi. And also because Whitman took liberties with verse. And as Rapound said, he broke the back of the iambic pentameter because he created this open verse. Rumi didn't quite break the back of Persian poetry, but for his time, he took a lot of chances and was very experimental and used all these different kinds of rhythm and meter in his work. And certainly his messages were the kind of mystical messages that Whitman also articulated, I think, in his work.
Poetry is so fascinating because it really applies to all of us individually, almost based on a kind of time or a moment in our life. And I wonder if you walked away from this project with a particular Rumi quote, kind of following everything, you really can think back on as being the one that means a lot to you today.
I have many, but that just popped into my head was when you discover the source of sunlight, whatever direction you go will be east. I think that that's many things. kind of open, but it's this great acceptance and freedom that you find in Rumi, and also this idea that all religions in some way have a source in the same kind of mystical illumination. And I think that he was getting at that in that work. So somewhere else he says, whether he is Turk or Tajik, I am close to him. So at this moment, I think these messages about erasing differences between religion and race are very relevant and important, and give a strong edge to Rumi's work.
Brad Gooch, author of a wonderful new book, getting great reviews. Title of the book, of course, is Rumi's Secret Life of the Sufi Poet of Love. Brad is going to be in Washington, D.C., speaking at the sold-out event for Smithsonian
Services.
Is it? It is sold out, Brad. So,
wow.
Congrats to you.
Good to hear.
Good to hear, absolutely. And if audience members are interested in signing up for the waiting list, they can do that. There'll be a link at the website. But Brad Gooch, thanks so much for joining us today. Okay. Thanks for spending a little bit.
Wonderful speaking with you.
Yeah, thank you. Good luck with this. I as I say, I'm a fan. I think this work is really wonderful, and the way you've treated it in the kind of the biographical sense, I didn't ever find anything like that as complete as this is, certainly with regard to his life. So wonderful job.
Right. That's why I wrote it.
Yeah.
I too was looking. Okay. But thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks to our guest today, Brad Gooch, and to Smithsonian Associates. We certainly appreciate all their help and support in the podcast. And as usual, we'll post links to everything so you'll find out a lot more information about Brad's new book and his website. And also, my thanks go to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful that you're spending some of it with me today. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, or send me an email at info@notold-better.com. Again, info@notold-better.com. You can find me on Voxer at Not Old Better, where you can easily leave a voice text, which, with your permission, I can play here on the show. Stay tuned for our next show. It's another great one, and we're going to discuss the subject of eating and aging, specifically the high degree of celiac disease and gluten intolerance among those age 55 plus. This is a show that you're not going to want to miss. Remember, contact information and feedback, as well as show ideas, info@notold-better.com. Find us at Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and notold-better.com. Talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks to all.